Welcome to Talking Global Infrastructure, brought to you by the Global Infrastructure Investor Association. Now more than ever, governments around the world are recognizing the importance of partnership with the private sector to deliver the transformational investment required to meet global challenges. But how do we deliver the enormous scale of investment needed to close the infrastructure gap in an affordable way, whilst addressing societal challenges such as net zero commitments, climate resilience, and the digital economy? GIIA and its members are at the forefront of this debate, and Talking Global Infrastructure is the podcast that will delve into these subjects and more to bring you valuable insights from the experts in the sector. Hi, I'm John Phillips, Deputy CEO at the Global Infrastructure Investor Association. And in this episode of our podcast, I'm delighted to be joined by Mark Keynes, who's a partner at Flint Global and leads the competition and regulatory team there. Hi, Mark.
Hi, John.
GIA and Flint have been collaborating on a report titled Regulating for Investment. In this report, we make a number of recommendations on the current policy and regulatory framework that's in the UK, with a focus on how responsible investment can support the economy and environment whilst being sensitive to affordability concerns. So I'm looking forward to talking with Mark about this report and sharing some of the content with you. So Mark, getting the regulatory framework in good shape to meet our future infrastructure needs is really important. But of course, it's not an easy task, and there are many complex issues and trade-offs to consider. Can you set the scene for us for the context to the report and for our listeners?
Certainly. So historically, the UK regulatory framework, I think we can agree, has been seen as a gold standard across the globe. Since privatisation, there's been a system of independent regulation which has unlocked a significant amount of investment in utilities. We estimate about £230 billion since privatisation, whilst also reducing consumer bills through very material improvements in efficiency. And the basic model of enabling competition wherever possible and price regulating the parts of the market that cannot be exposed to competition has largely stood the test of time. But things have changed. The scale of investment that is now required is putting our existing system under strain. The UK needs high-quality, resilient infrastructure and is legally committed to net zero emissions by 2050. Getting there will require a massive level of investment. PwC estimates over £40 billion a year over the next 10 to 15 years. A regulatory model that was designed largely to incentivize efficiency improvements is perhaps not well equipped to meet this challenge. This really matters. The UK is one of countless destinations for foreign direct investment, and to mobilize the private sector investment needed to support clean and resilient growth, the government needs to ensure that the policy and regulatory frameworks and their application support the perception of the UK as an attractive market. The recent determinations within the water sector are a good indicator of some of the negative impacts that we can see on investment in the UK. Many of the investors we've spoken to have found that the environment in the water sector, and indeed in the energy sector and others, creates significant risk and significant volatility. Overlaid on that is policy and political risk. So as an example, the nationalisation risk around the time of the last election was a significant concern for many investors and has damaged the reputation of the UK as a destination in which to invest.
So we've got a lot of different stakeholders with a vested interest in this complicated equation, Mark. How do you assess the different kind of needs from those different categories of stakeholder?
So let's start with consumers, which I think is almost the easiest. So what consumers are looking for is high quality infrastructure that is affordable and resilient. And they expect companies, investors, regulators, and policymakers to deliver that for them. But I think it's fair to say that they often feel that outcomes fall short of their expectations. And the energy crisis at the moment is a good example. Investors, who are obviously of particular interest in this podcast, are primarily looking for predictability, stability, and a revenue stream that will give them a fair bet on the investments that they make. But right now, they don't feel that regulation and policymaking are necessarily delivering those things. Regulation and policy are unpredictable. Revenue models seem to be set up in a way that depresses returns, and anticipatory investment is in many cases disallowed. Then let's think about regulators. I spent many years as a regulator. One of the critical things to realize about the people who work in regulators, because in the end, it's people who make decisions, is they're smart people who are trying to make good decisions, and they're trying to do the right thing. The challenge is very often trying to identify what the right thing is. But the incentives on regulators make them quite risk averse. The downside risks for a regulator of getting something wrong are typically a lot bigger than the benefits of getting something right. And they see their overriding duty as consumer protection. It's difficult for them to take bold steps, and they are always worried about what's going on in the political and policy arena. So if we step up into that world, policymakers respect independent regulation, and they don't want to interfere. But they will do so if they think that things are not going the way that they should. However, it is very difficult for a policymaker to intervene in the regulatory world in the right way. Short-term political considerations can often get in the way. There are arrangements in place to formalize the political and regulatory interface through strategic policy statements, for example, but they don't always work as well as they should. Now, for a long time, none of this really mattered. In the early post-privatization years, there was enough low-hanging fruit. It was easy to drive efficiency improvements in utilities that had grown inefficient under national ownership. But now it really does matter because of the scale of investment that's needed. It's also needed for security supply, resilience, and digitization. So it's not just about net zero. It's about many other things as well. And that investment goes beyond what consumers necessarily want to pay for. Much of it is about wider societal interests. The current model is not really set up to deliver what's needed. But there is a big prize if we can get it right.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Mark. That, and particularly that piece about the consumer and society and the two different drivers that are at play there. We've talked about it before between us, and this sort of customer versus citizen potential conflict. Can you sort of unpack that a little bit for us and help our listeners to understand that concept?
Certainly. So they're perhaps not in tension. It's more that the citizen interest very often goes further than the consumer interest. So very often regulators will encourage companies to ask their consumer what it is they want. And consumers respond to questionnaires and say, I would like this and I'm prepared to pay this amount for it. But that doesn't necessarily capture all of the things that we as a society believe that our water companies or energy network companies should be providing for us. And I think you can see two perfectly simple examples of this. So one of them is around river health. Probably we all feel that river health is important, but we're not necessarily prepared to pay for it. And if we were asked in a questionnaire, would we want to pay for clean rivers? Some people would say yes, but a lot of people would say no, I've got other pressures on my cost of living and I'm not prepared to pay that. Similarly, net zero is something that is going to require immense investment and is going to be expensive for a long period. And the benefits of the investment in net zero will be felt by future generations rather than today's generations in large part. Both of those things require us to think differently about the way in which today's consumers pay for the investment that's needed. And I think that is a very fundamental change to where we used to be.
Within our report, we've tried to assemble viewpoints from a range of stakeholders to see if we can establish a broad consensus on the challenges and the outcomes, with the aim of bringing regulators, industry, and government closer together and ensure we're all pulling in the right direction. So who have you spoken to, Mark, in forming recommendations in this report? And what level of consensus did you find in those conversations?
So we felt that to get this report right, it was essential that we spoke to quite a wide range of stakeholders to get views that go well beyond just the investor community. So we engaged with a variety of different stakeholders, including consumer groups such as WICH, the Consumer Council for Water, and a number of others. We also spoke to regulators and we spoke to policymakers and politicians to get a sense of the different viewpoints. In doing that, we found a very wide degree of consensus about six key areas. First, all people agreed, in fact, that the current system of regulation broadly works and should be preserved. So we need independent regulation, but we probably do need change to make it more agile, flexible, and accountable. Second, everybody agreed with the principle that we need high-quality, resilient infrastructure. That is something that will underpin the UK's future economic success. Third, affordability is a very major concern. That is more acute in the most recent months than we have seen for a long time. Fourth, there's a real focus and understanding that we need long-term thinking in order to solve the problems that we face today, because many of those problems are long-term problems. We have a regulatory regime that is set up largely around five-year price controls in many areas, and that does not, people agreed, necessarily lead us to think about the long-term. Fifth, regulation has got extremely complex and needs to be simplified. That is much easier said than done. But I think the way I would describe it is that we have added a succession of sticking plasters to our regulatory model. So as we've introduced one level of complexity, we then add something on top and then something on top of that. We need to scale back regulation to the extent that we can to focus on what really matters. And the sixth point, which was again agreed by everybody we spoke to, is that we need a model that incentivizes investment, recognizing the need for affordability. But if we're going to deliver the high quality, resilient infrastructure that people need, we need to incentivize investment.
Oh, that's really interesting. So, can I just pick up on the area about resilience that you mentioned? Because I think that's a fascinating area. What do we mean by resilient infrastructure, Mark? Why has that sort of description entered our vocabulary in recent time?
Perhaps the simplest answer to that is to be extremely British and talk about the weather. But ultimately, I think what we are seeing is no surprise at all. We're seeing more extreme weather events. So in the case of water, greater risk of flooding, but also greater risk of drought. That requires a different infrastructure response. We also see the impact of storms, for example, on electricity distribution networks, as we saw with Storm Arwen. I think the other piece is we have greater expectations now for what we mean by resilient infrastructure. And I take it one step further to say that I think it also includes a view as to the way in which we should protect our environment. So I discussed earlier the issue of river health and indeed beach health, both things that I think people regard as extremely important. So there is resilience of our natural environment as well. I think that's a really important part of it.
So in a way, we're kind of asking the question, how resilient do we want our infrastructure to be in the future? And what are we prepared to pay to achieve those different levels of resilience that might be on offer? Very interesting. So can you bring a summary, if you like, of the recommendations that we've made, having sort of set out that fascinating context, Mark, and the conversations that you've been having with stakeholders? So where did that point you in terms of the areas of recommendations to follow?
The starting point is that there aren't easy answers to this, but we have some very strong foundations that we can build on. So we set out in the report, having discussed with you, with stakeholders, three overarching requirements for the UK's future regulatory model. So first, we need to make sure that we've got the institutional arrangements right. So we need clarity on the boundary between government policy and independent regulation. We need clarity on the long-term vision for our infrastructure sectors. We need to simplify regulators' duties and give them a clear set of priorities. And we need to hold regulators account so that they address those priorities effectively. If we can get those things right, then we can create an environment in which investors see the stability and the predictability that they need from the regulatory regime. Second, we need to simplify regulation and take a longer-term view. So the current system of regulation is good at incentivizing the short term, but it is less good at ensuring that the right assets are built at the right cost. As I said before, regulators are naturally risk-averse, and we can't criticize them for that, but we can try to correct for it. They tend to be nervous about approving anticipatory investment, but that investment is essential if the UK is to meet its goals. For some of that investment, there's a legitimate role for competition, what the government has rightly referred to in its recent economic regulation paper as competition for the market rather than competition in the market. Other assets will still be subject to legacy regulation, and we need a system in which regulators are able to approve the investment that is needed for the future without subjecting it to endless repeated reviews. And third, and this is absolutely critical, we need to tackle the challenges of affordability head on. We need to think both about the way costs are spread across today's consumers, effectively targeting support at people when they are vulnerable, and we also need to think about the way costs are spread across generations. So to some extent, we have lost the link between the assets that are in place today and the way that people pay for them. And we think that looking forward, there is scope to make that link more strongly, which would support a stronger sense of intergenerational fairness. But if we can't get this challenge of affordability right, then anything that says that we are going to need to spend more money to build the infrastructure that we need will fail.
And is it fair,
to say, Mark, do you think that if we don't get this right, if we don't manage to create the right policy and regulatory framework to stimulate the investment that we've spoken about, given the long-term nature of infrastructure investment, it's going to end up costing us a lot more in the long run than if we bite the bullet and sort it out and get a right framework together now?
So I think that's almost certainly true. It's something that is extremely difficult to evidence because we're talking about, well, what's the counterfactual? What happens if we don't do something? And it will be very difficult, even if we do all of the right things today, to look back and say, well, those things that we did mean that it's all costing us less than would otherwise have been the case. But I suspect if we went round and spoke to the same stakeholders again, there would be a strong degree of agreement that what you say is exactly right. And what we need to do is make sure we don't miss that opportunity.
But it has to be right that it's going to, in the long term, more expensive to retrofit infrastructure than it is to build it and design it correctly in the first place.
Yes, I think it's almost impossible to disagree with that.
So how do we move this forward, Mark? We've worked hard on this report. We've come up with what I think are some very sensible recommendations, but how do we actually get traction on this going forward?
It's a very good question. And I think the answer is that there is a role for almost all of the stakeholders that we've spoken about up to now. So we know that government is making progress in some areas. I think we don't think that government is necessarily moving as quickly as it needs to. I mean, let's be honest, these are big, complicated things that we need to do. But there is a need for government policy to keep moving. There is scope for regulators to think really carefully about the way that they exercise their duties. As we've said, if those duties were scaled back, we think that would really help them. And you know, we would urge them to take a slightly less risk-averse approach, particularly on anticipatory investment. But there's also a really important role here for industry and the investment community to step up and to demonstrate that if the right changes do start to come along, they are also prepared to do their part. And I very much hope that's what your members are able to do.
Thank you, Mark. And I'm absolutely certain that our members are up for that challenge and very engaged on this topic and on all the issues that we've touched on during this conversation. So if anybody would like to see the report and read it in more detail, you can find that on our website, which is giia.net. And the report is called Regulating for Investment. So that just leaves it to me to thank you, Mark, for your time and very much enjoyed a discussion with you about the report, and we look forward to getting some feedback and seeing what people have made of our recommendations. Thanks very much, Mark.
Thank you very much, John. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Talking Global Infrastructure. For more information about GIIA, please visit our website, giia.net, and look out for the next edition of our podcast by following us on LinkedIn and Twitter.